Hi, my name is Evgenia Medvedeva.
I'm Alexa Kinnearum.
And Chris Kinnearum.
Hi, this is Mariah Nagasu.
Hi, everyone. This is Jason Brown.
Hi, I'm Patrick Chan.
Hi, I'm Maya Shibutani.
And I'm Alex Shibutani.
Hey, this is Karen Chan, the 2017 national champion.
Hey, this is Ashley Wagner.
Hey, this is Ryan Bradley, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
We are fully into November now, and we are halfway through the Grand Prix Series, and what a crazy Grand Prix Series we've had so far. Welcome back to Ice Talk, everyone. It is episode 48, and I am Jackie Wong of rockerskating.com. We were just in Beijing for Cup of China, and we are now about to move just a little bit east to Osaka for NHK Trophy this week. If you missed last week's episode, I had Alexa and Chris Kinnearum on to talk about their preparations for NHK Trophy this week, and a short program music announcement as well. So do go back and listen if you haven't already. But speaking of Beijing, we will have Cup of China bronze medalist Max Aaron on later in this episode. But first up on the show, we have Ryan Bradley. Well, American skating fans know our next guest very well. He is a frequent part of the Ice Desk segment on Ice Network and has been bringing you figure skating coverage via Olympic Channel this season. I want to welcome 2011 U.S. champion Ryan Bradley back on the podcast, this time as our expert for this week's NHK Trophy. Great to have you on, Ryan.
Hey, Jackie, it's great to be here.
Well, you just spent your weekend doing a show with Scott Hamilton in Cleveland. Tell us a bit more about that.
Scott does a benefit show in Cleveland. It was the 18th year of his show. And yeah, it's a pretty great time. He brings together a lot of top skaters. We performed a music from Peter Cetera, who was the lead singer in Chicago and singer-songwriter. And yeah, it was a really cool show. And I don't know. It's just a great group of people that we've gotten very used to working with. So it's always a lot of fun.
Great to see the skating community continue to rally around Scott Hamilton and the cause that year after year. And it's wonderful to see. Well, I'm going to jump right in to figure skating and NHK Trophy this weekend. It is, of course, our fourth stop on the Grand Prix Series. And hard to believe that we are already over halfway through the Grand Prix Series this season. But I wanted to start with the ladies event with you, Ryan.
Okay.
Yevgenia Medvedeva looking to extend her winning streak and continue to kind of pave her path toward the Olympic gold this week. But for the home fans, their eyes will be on the return of Satoko Miyahara. What are you excited to see at NHK for the ladies?
I mean, for me, it's Satoko because she was such a major player for a few years there. And then with the injuries, she was out last season. In her absence, some very talented Japanese women have stepped up. I think it's really important for Satoko to be on her game, and going head to head with Medvedeva is always a lot of pressure for these top ladies. Yeah, I just don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
just because that's a long time to be away from the spotlight. Because she's a smaller jumper and more of a rotator, it's a little bit easier to keep your ammunition going, you know, when you take time off. I think that the power skaters have a little bit more trouble getting things back rather than the fast rotators. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
It's crazy how, you know, she's only really been out for 11 months or so, and it just seems like the entire landscape has changed. You know, Japanese women have two spots in Pyeongchang as opposed to the three that we would expect from them. And over the summer, we actually saw a little bit of news from Miyahara where she was saying that her bone density was too low and that the doctors advised her to gain some weight. So she actually gained like 8 pounds over the summer to kind of offset that bone density thing. So who knows what's going to happen? Like you said, we're all hoping for a great return from her.
Especially with something like that, you just want her to be healthy because that's a hard thing. And when your bone density gets low with, even though she's not particularly powerful, there's still a lot of impact coming down. And she's such a sweetheart that you don't want to see something terrible happen.
Totally. Looking at the Japanese women, really four main skaters who are vying for those spots. Miyahara here at NHK Trophy for the first time this season. And then Honda, Higuchi, and Mihara, who all of whom we saw last week at Cup of China, crazily enough. If you looked ahead to the Japan Championships late next month, who is your favorite right now, given what we've seen so far from those the three that I just talked about.
Wow. Well, that's very tricky because I haven't seen Sotoko. If you were to ask me next week, I'd be able to give you a much firmer answer. I like to think that Sotoko will be in that top two. Outside of that, I feel like Marin Honda hasn't really taken the step that she was expected to at these Grand Prix. She's done a nice job, but hasn't made a huge splash. Wakaba has been, I mean, she's one of my favorites anyway, just because she's so powerful and so mature for her age and just really has a lot of poise on the ice. But Mai Mihara is just also just like a little dynamite, you know. So I would think that because I haven't seen Sotoko, and that's a question mark, that I would say Wakaba and Mai would have those two spots most likely. But you have to deliver at the Japanese Championships. How many times have we seen favorites or favorites to make the team not even place in the top five? You know, it's very deep there. So it all depends on how they deliver.
Oh, the drama.
Always at their end. Granted, in Japan, they're pretty comfortable just selecting the team no matter how they place at nationals. So
I was looking at the Japanese selection criteria the other day, and, you know, as you do on a rainy Sunday, right? They do obviously place the national championships on a huge pedestal to select the team, but there is criteria, much like U.S. figure skating, where they look at the Grand Prix final, they look at the Grand Prix standings, they look at the world standings, they look at a lot of other things. So you wonder how much of that is going to play in this season.
Well, I think that it'll become very relevant just because the ladies are doing very well. And it makes a big difference. If, you know, some of the big names were falling all over the place, then it would make it tricky. Or if there was just one that was dominating over the others, just kind of like in the U.S. ladies, you know, I feel like the favorites aren't really giving themselves the wiggle room over the others championships.
Well, you set me up perfectly for my next question for you. For American fans, we can't forget the showdown between Mariah Bell and Mirai Nagasu. It's going to be their third meeting already this season. And it's 1-1 so far, with Nagasu winning the matchup at U.S. Classic and then Bell winning the matchup at Ross Telecom Cup. How do you see these two playing out this week?
It's going to be very interesting. I mean, they both have looked good at times this summer, but not perfect. Nagasu is obviously putting so much pressure on this triple axel, and that's a lot. That's a big thing to add to the arsenal in an Olympic season. And what we've seen from Mirai is success with the triple axel and then some funny business on easier elements. So for her, it just depends on how she can manage those expectations of hitting or missing that triple axel and being able to get down to business and hit everything else afterwards. And with Mariah just has to, like, she just has to do her job, because when she's on, she's so effective, and she just gets a little goofy on some of those takeoffs and then she's done. So, and that's a hard thing, because in the ladies event, you can't really let the wheels come off, otherwise you plummet. And Mariah's just let that happen a couple of times. And she also got herself on the review screen a couple of times at her first Grand Prix, which is very difficult, because once you start that trend, they just start assuming that everything is going to be close, and they look at all of your landings, and nothing ever looks better in slow motion.
Yeah, I mean, she's been on the review screen really constantly, consistently for the last few years. And I do think the judges don't give her the benefit of the doubt as much as they give some of the other skaters, exactly, precisely because of what you just said. I mean, I was in Moscow for Ross Telecom Cup and, you know, watching Mirai in practice. She fell twice in the short program after she landed that triple axel, which I thought was clean and most people in the arena thought was clean. I don't think I saw her fall two times in practice all week. Yeah. And so it's such a mental game for her. And for me, the fact that she came back in the free skate and didn't fall apart there, you know, no matter how many kind of unders that she got, I thought that was a big win for her. And that's going to help her with some momentum coming into NHK.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought that fight was very important, but it's tough when you live on the review screen. And, you know, I was actually referring to Mariah being on the review screen
Ah.
But, I mean, Mirai's been plagued with that for the past, like you said, 4 years or so. But yeah, that's tough. And every time that you go up on a big jump like that, they are going to look at the landing in slow motion. If you're groundbreaking, they want to make sure that it's as impressive as it seems. And that's a hard thing. And if that takes away from the rest of the program, and I feel, you know, in Canada we saw, or I'm sorry, was it Canada?
It was Canada, the crazy panel.
Yeah. So, you know, you just, it's important to see that the components don't fall apart because of the triple axel as well. Because I think that in that free program, even though Mirai fought through things, she didn't perform. Like, she's one of the best performers in the world, and she didn't perform the program to, you know, the standard that she's set. That just kind of takes you out of the moment. And then, of course, the unders, of course. But, you know, I think that that's one of her biggest strengths. And I don't want to see the triple axel pull away from that ability to emote on the ice. And yeah, I just hope we don't see that at NHK.
And besides the Japanese and Americans, there's a lot of great skaters also. And besides Medvedeva, Carolina Kostner is going to be there with the Japanese Rika Hongo, and Yuna Shiraiwa are going to be there. I mean, it's quite the packed field. I'm very excited to see the senior debut of Paulina Surtskaya.
Uh-huh.
Former world junior champion, and really trying to make her mark as she recovers from surgery last year and is like battling a rare genetic disease. So do you see anybody challenging Medvedeva? Is it Kostner? Is it someone else?
At this event or period?
At this event.
No. I think Medvedeva's been so consistent over these past 2+ seasons now. She would legitimately need to make 2 mistakes more than once for somebody to beat her. Like, I honestly think that anyone in this event could skate clean and Medvedeva could fall twice and still win. But like, then they would have to do it again at another event to be able to catch her. I just think that she's put herself way too far out in front of everyone else.
Yeah. Which is a shame to say, because you would never want to see that kind of thing happen.
Right.
But the way that the grades of execution are right now, that is how it works with the scores.
So. Yeah, and it's, I mean, they're getting out of control with the grades of execution. I mean, it's just getting to be a little bit silly, because Medvedeva is great. She should be winning every event, but she should not be getting +3s on every single element. Like, I'm sorry, it's just, there's better jumpers, there's better spinners, and there's better skaters. She's just the most consistent and puts together the best package every single time. But, like, I don't know, these perfect scores that are coming up are a little insane.
Yeah. Well, moving on to dance, I don't think there's anyone stopping Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer from another win. But the question is, can any of their competitors close the gap even a bit this week? And I'm primarily looking at Madison Hubble and Zach Donahue for that. What are you seeing from them in the ice dance?
You know, I think that Maddie and Zach really, they looked great at Skate Canada, you know, and that's a tough place to skate against Tessa and Scott and against Caitlin and Andrew. You know, that's not an easy place to skate, let alone get scored. But yeah, I actually think that, no, of course, they're not going to reach Tess and Scott. But I do think that the gap between them, their scores at Canada and their scores here will be better. I think it'll be a lot closer, but I don't know. It'll be interesting because the French just put up such a big number in China. So, so I kind of feel like when you see these competitions happen, like, it just becomes a game of top that, and those numbers start getting really high. But yeah, I think without a team in between Tessa and Scott and Maddie and Zach, I think that that gap will definitely shrink a bit. Not enough for it to be a challenge, but it'll shrink a bit.
Yeah, I do think that Hubble and Donahue's performance this week is going to do a lot in terms of setting them up for, whether it's for the Grand Prix final, right, or for the U.S. Championships, where the kind of top dog in ice dance coming out of that is going to have some kind of advantage and confidence going into the Olympics. So
right.
They are and have been really the third ice dance team for the U.S. for the last few seasons, but they, you know, they're trying to make their way up, and it's not inconceivable to see them winning nationals this year.
No, definitely not. But they need to make the Grand Prix final to make that happen, because the Shibutanis winning their first Grand Prix are most certainly going to make the final. So if one of those teams is in the final and the other's not, I just don't see that happening in ice dance without a mistake.
So much about momentum in ice dance.
It is. It's, you know, the politics and the momentum are so crucial when you're trying to establish yourself within your own country. Maddie and Zach need to put up a strong skate here. And I mean, this isn't an easy event. Anna and Luca are like, they put up big numbers from time to time. Victoria and Nikita can also be great on any given day. They're going to have to deliver, but they need to be second, even to give themselves a shot.
Exactly. I do think that they are a solid favorite for second. But you mentioned former world champions Anna Capellini and Luca Lanote. They're going to be making their season debut, and fairly late as compared to everyone else, because Anna Capellini is recovering from a pretty nasty cut on her hand that required a bunch of stitches early in the season that took them out of Lombardia. So they are a bit of a wild card for me, because we haven't seen them yet and we don't know what they're kind of capable of this season.
Yeah, I think that they're so weathered. Like, they've been doing this together for so long that if they feel trained and they feel confident, they're dangerous. I mean, they're world champions, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
You can never count a team like that out. And they've still stayed around that second tier. Like, even though they've fallen off a bit, they've still, I don't know, they've put up big numbers and they've beaten top teams here or there, just not consistently. So I don't think it would be inconceivable for them to make a push for second if Maddie and Zach leave them a little bit of ground.
Yep. Well, over to the pairs. Wenjing Sui and Song Han are, of course, the headliners, coming off a huge win at home at Cup of China just last weekend. You'd think that their closest competition will be Ksenia Stobova and Fedor Klimov. How do you think they're going to fare there?
I think that Stobova and Klimov are in trouble. Just seeing them this year, they just look out of sorts. The number of mistakes Ksenia Stobova made at Cup of Russia,
it was really uncharacteristic.
She never misses like that, and she just seemed out of sorts. And it stinks because they're one of my favorites. I love their energy on the ice and how their flow, because they just fly around the rink. And they just don't look confident. They look like they've missed too much training time with injuries. And it's just hard to get into any sort of rhythm when you're always battling something. So yeah, you have to think that they're always in the conversation because of what they're capable of. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Americans go home with a medal. Just looking at how things are going, I'm not sure if they could beat Stolbov and Klimov without a lot of help. But Stolbov and Klimov have been giving a lot of help recently.
You look at Stolbov and Klimov and kind of, looking back at what you were saying about Satoko Miyahara being able to kind of get back her jumps because she's a quick rotator, right? Mm-hmm. Stolbova and Klimov are not known as like the power pair. And so, it's with the injury, it's been injuries, I guess, it's been really tough for them to really get a nice triple twist back in the game. And right, they're strong single skaters. You have to see how consistent they are on the things that they do well, because they're not blowing the others away with, you know, executions on the lifts or on the triple twist. It's they're blowing people away with their incredible basic skating, which is why we love watching them so much.
Yeah, but it also makes them very volatile, because
yep,
the teams that have, like, when you look at the Germans and their triple twist, and Alexa and Chris and their triple twist, and Tarasova and Morozov, you know that they're getting a huge score on that every single time.
Yep.
And the Russians, to match that, do the triple toe, double toe, and the big throw at the end. But the risk value on those things is so much higher, because if you're even just a little bit off, the triple twist is still going to happen for those teams. But those triple toes and a triple-triple becomes very difficult to execute. And it just doesn't give them firm footing. where some of the other teams that have that power, like you stated, just get those points regardless.
You mentioned Alexa and Chris Kinnearum earlier. They're, you know, even though they missed last season's Nationals with that crazy illness that Alexa had, they're absolutely still the top pair team for the U.S., and it's their first appearance on the Grand Prix this season. And like you said, I think a podium finish is very much within reach, and I think it would be great for them to do that here. Where do you think their head is going into this week, and then, you know, knowing that there is one spot for the pairs for the Olympics?
You know, I think they feel pretty confident the way that everything panned out last season, and then the way that they performed at the World Championships on short training because of a nightmare season of injury and illness. I think that that just gave them a ton of confidence. Also, having an entire summer to be able to train and be healthy is going to go a long way, which paired with that confidence, I think could make them very dangerous. Obviously, they have to hit their jumps, you know, and that'll be,
yep.
That's unfortunately been the question mark for them. But when they do, they're one of the only American, they are the only American team that's capable of getting up into the 140s. And if you can't do that, then you're hoping to get into the top 10 at this point.
Still the only team from the U.S. to break 200 internationally. So they are the cream of the crop for the U.S. pairs for sure. But before we lose you to more figure skating yourself, I'm going to switch over to the men. It is the NHK Trophy, of course, and there will be Yuzuru Hanyu Mania once again. Flashback to 2 years ago at NHK, that was where he delivered that set of amazing programs in world record fashion, which he's since beaten himself a couple times. he returns this week with those two same programs, and he will be the favorite here. But I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on his decision to go back to his two signature programs.
I think it's interesting. There's a couple of schools of thought. You know, one is to just constantly be moving forward and trying to express yourself and move on. But then there's the finding that comfort of what you know has worked in the past. And I think that can give a lot of confidence to a skater. I do think it's very difficult when you go back to a program to keep it looking fresh and feeling fresh. But Yuzuru is such a great performer anyway that I don't think that that'll be a big problem for him. I mean, to be fair, Yuzuru, if he skates clean, he's going to win every event he goes into, you know. So the comfort's priority number one, and if he feels like this is going to get him to a place where he can do his job, then he's got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if we flashback 3.5 years ago now, you know, his free skate at the Olympics was not great, and I'm sure he knows he needs to do a lot better than that this time around in order to repeat as Olympic champion.
Yeah, it was a completely different ball game back then.
Exactly. But with Patrick Chan out of NHK this week, after a really disappointing free skate at Skate Canada, and really just citing that he's going to withdraw just to make sure he trains properly for Canadians and for the Olympics. For me, the battle for the podium is going to be a showdown between the Americans. So two U.S. champions, both really, really, really trying to make their case for the Olympic team this fall, Adam Rippon and Jason Brown. Brown was second at Skate Canada, and Rippon is making his Grand Prix debut this week. So how do you see this matchup playing out?
It's going to be interesting because I feel with only three spots, two of those.
I like that you just said only three spots.
Well, sorry, you know what I mean. With three spots, only two of them are going to go to jumpers, I feel. We have too many guys that are doing three plus quads that I don't think that we're going to send two guys that haven't shown confidence in their quad. I think that every time that these guys go head to head, they're making a statement for the component skater that's going to go to the Olympics. I don't know. Adam's shown a little bit more success with the quad than Jason has in competition, but I honestly think that they're both much better skaters when they don't do the quad, when they just do what they do to the best of their ability and max out their grade of execution on their spinning and their skating skills and every jumping pass. I don't want to pick one over the other just because I love these boys very much, you know, and I do want to see them both skate very well you have to think track record wise, if they both skate really well, Jason's the one that comes out on top. Yeah, it depends. We'll see where they're at and the proficiency of the quad at this point in the game.
Yeah, it's like Sophie's choice for some of these U.S. selections. Jason Brown, I think for him, his component scores have escalated, and it started really at Worlds last year, where, you know, I think earlier in the season, I remember last year they were both at Skate America and they were getting fairly similar component scores because Jason had that extra international exposure with Worlds and skating well there. Like, I would not be surprised if he ended up with a couple more points in advantage in components to Rippon. So I think for Adam, it is really important for him to at least stand that quad up in some way, or at least rotate that quad in some way, so that he can continue to keep it.
Yeah, close if you're not them. Doing more jumps than Jason Brown, like, being able to catch him is really hard. He's a points monster. Everything he does, like, it's sneaky because you watch that, like, you watch that score in the upper left hand corner of the screen generally when you're watching these events, and with the big guys, it just flies up. Pause, flies up, pause. Jason's is just crawling, and it just keeps crawling into the end. And all of a sudden, you're like, wow, that's almost the same point as the guy that just did four quads. But he just has such a nice quality to the things that he does. He has so many wow moments that are outside of the jumping that it just makes it very tricky to be able to contend with him if you're not doing substantially more than him. And Adam is capable, but he hasn't shown consistently that he can do enough technically to beat Jason Brown consistently.
A couple other names to watch for here. Dmitry Aliyev, who's really battling for one of those two Russian spots along with Sergey Voronov. And then a late addition with Keegan Messing and Nam Nguyen already being there to begin with. So they're looking for that second spot for the Canadians. So a lot of intrigue in NHK with different countries and different Olympic spots, and it's going to be really fun to watch. But really looking forward to this weekend, and thank you for all your insights today, Ryan, and happy NHK to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Jackie. It was good talking to you.
Hey, this is Max Aaron, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Fresh off his bronze medal at Cup of China just last weekend, Max Aaron has had quite the trip, literally and figuratively, around the world over the past week, and he just landed back home not too long ago. Welcome back to Ice Talk, Max.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's glad to be back on air.
My biggest question for you right now, how's that jet lag going?
To be honest, I haven't had it worse before. You know, I didn't get much sleep last night, but I'm excited to be back in the States after a great event and just looking forward to the next one. So I'll get over the jet lag. Hopefully quickly, and get ready to go.
You're back on the ice already, right?
Yeah, I already trained both programs today, so I'm full speed ahead. Full speed ahead. That's all I see is the next event.
Oh, craziness. Well, the Grand Prix Series has been just a bit unpredictable this season, as always, I guess, but there were a lot of ups and downs with the men's competition at Cup of China, but you were really the one who was the steadiest throughout the two programs. And between US Classic and now Cup of China, you've delivered some of the most consistent skating of your career so far, a personal best total at US Classic, and then a personal best free skate at Cup of China. So tell me about your season so far and how you feel about where you are right now.
Yeah, thank you. Really, I'm just in a pretty good mindset. I went back to 2014 and that season and realized how stressed out I was and, you know, how nervous I was. Not only for myself, but, you know, I wanted to really make my parents proud. And so going into this season, I know, you know, and I'm older and, you know, I'm doing things differently. And really, I'm just taking every day, you know, pretty much every day and enjoying it. And I'm just trying to make memories along the way. And as everyone kind of stresses out over this season, I'm just enjoying it. Enjoying the practices, enjoying, you know, flying and representing the United States. And just taking it, like I said, day by day and really keen on the few things that I'm working on in practice and focusing on that, and rather than, you know, focusing on, you know, what everyone else is doing or, you know, what point total do I want to get. It's really just, you know, putting up my personal best every day in practice. And when I compete, I'm going to do the same thing, personal best, and when I compete, and don't let the nerves get to me. You know, I'm skating free. you know, I'm an underdog this year. You know, I had a really tough year at Nationals. No one really expected me to go anywhere. You know, I'm just having fun out here, making memories with my parents and, you know, hopefully get that opportunity to make an Olympic team.
You talk about last season and the tough performance that you had. You really had a solid lead up going into the U.S. Championships throughout last season, but then it just kind of unraveled in the short program and you really couldn't recover from that. But what have you taken from that experience going into this season?
You start to realize that, you know, how, first of all, fragile, you know, I guess the sport is and how tough it is. Like, you can be on top in 1 minute and the next minute you could be ninth. So, you know, going from second at Nationals to ninth, you drop so quickly. And so, you know, I'm really just enjoying it along the way, like I said. Enjoying practices. And that was the main thing I went going into the season. What do I enjoy about skating? And I found that and I took that. And every day I asked myself, what am I enjoying about today? And what do I want to improve upon? And so, like I said, taking it day by day, moment by moment. And it just, you know, I start to really enjoy these programs. And these programs I picked are pieces that I've wanted to skate to for an extremely long time now. And, you know, everyone, no, you can't skate this, you can't skate this. And you know what? I'm doing it for myself this season. I don't care if people think that Phantom of the Opera is redundant and overused, and same with Les Mis, and I can really care less. I'm going out there. I'm going to skate clean as I can, perform as big as I can. These pieces, like I said, are something I've always wanted to skate to. I really, really enjoy, and I'm really happy and glad my mom went to go to China. I had both my parents in Salt Lake City. I'm going to have both my parents in France. And we're just enjoying it along the way. And I get to share that with my family, which is really nice.
That's very cool. One more question on last season. I know you had hernia surgery in the off season right before. So how much of an effect on your last season did that have?
To be honest, it was crazy how much it affected my entire season after having that hernia surgery. When I was seeing the doctor tell me, oh, it was 2 weeks and you'll be fine. And it was really like 2 months until I started jumping. And then it, you know, to get back from that, you know, I'm not really good when I take someone off. And then, you know, it took a lot of time to get rhythm back on the jumps and the season started and I probably should have withdrawn from a lot of events. But, you know, when you get caught behind, you know, you get left behind. And that was starting to happen. And so then I was trying to do the catch up game while still competing, which was, you know, tough, and I couldn't build confidence and I was just fighting myself the entire year. Like I said, it was probably maybe best to withdraw from all the events and just focus on getting better and healthy, but the sport is tough and unforgiving. So, you know, I wanted to stay relevant as best I can. But now that's, you know, behind me and took away some good parts of that season and you know, left the bad stuff behind. And, you know, going to this season, I just really wanted to enjoy it. Like I said, no one expected me to do anything this season. I'm doing it for myself and having my parents enjoy it along the way. And we're having fun. We're making memories. That's all I care about, like I said.
I am curious about one thing in particular this season, and it actually started at the aerial challenge earlier in the summer. Your quad Saukow has been your quad of choice for basically, I would say, your entire career, but it seems like the quad toe has taken over this season. Am I thinking things, or has there been a change there?
That's funny you notice that. I've always enjoyed the quad toe more than the quad sow. The quad toe, I just, you know, didn't have the correct technique at the time. I always enjoy doing it more, but this season, I realized that I really needed to add another quad to even try to make a shot or a dent in the results. And so I took it upon myself to relearn the quad toe. I had a lot of time by myself. I didn't work with any coaches for a couple months. And I retaught my technique. Basically, I went through every top man and learned his technique, which kind of sounds crazy. But I learned by trying different things. And so you name that skater, I probably tried his technique for a few days or a week, and I went through it, and then I found some techniques of two different guys that worked for me, and I started to build on my quads that way, and I feel pretty confident, pretty good about where I am, and it's just sticking with that and in the process and trusting the process along the way, like I said, enjoying it.
It was a conscious decision to change it from a forward inside three turn entrance into to the outside three turn entrance, right?
Yeah, correct. But there was a lot more. There was more to that, you know, with how to pick, you know, where your hips are, where I'm going to line up, what my air position is going to look like, how I'm going to check out. Like I said, those are the parts that I picked apart when I was watching other men do quadruple jumps, and you know, there's a lot of different ways why guys rotate a certain way, and I wanted to know why, and so I took it upon myself to learn why. And so obviously, you know, technique works for some people and some people don't, you know, can't copy others, and that's clearly evident when I tried it. But, you know, everyone finds their own niche, and I found hopefully my own niche in the technique in both quad sal and quad toe, and I feel good with it, and I'm just running with it now.
Nice. Well, with this season in mind, you have two new programs, which for this season seems to be somewhat of an anomaly that you're not going back to an old program. Like you said, both programs to big ballads from musicals that skating fans know well. And when I talked to Tom Sagrychuk last season, he said that exactly what you said earlier, that you had two pieces of music that you really wanted to skate to for this season. So those two ended up being these two pieces of music. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, I wanted to skate to, like I said, these pieces for so long now. And you know, every time everyone's like, no, it's overdone. Really, I remember telling Tom I was getting to this, and I told the choreographer, and she was on board. And I said, look, we're going to get a lot of flack for this, but really, I'm really want to do this so I enjoy it. I want to enjoy coming out every day. I want to enjoy every time I play my music that I'm going to have fun with it, and I'm really going to listen to the music. Even when on hard days and I, you know, can't win a single job in my program, I'm really going to just enjoy the piece of music. It's just something that I, you know, I feel the music just when it comes on, even when I'm not on the ice. And so I just want that to come through more and more throughout the season. And it definitely will help, obviously, you know, with the confidence on the jumps, but I already feel it without the jumps and the spins, and I can just feel the music, and you know, I know the ballad really well. And I have a lot of great memories from like watching other skaters skate to those programs, and I want to make myself, you know, memorable just like all the ones that I've watched along the way.
Yeah, and you mentioned your choreographer. You're working with a new choreographer this season, Catherine Hill, for these programs.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the change and what you are looking to do with the new choreographer.
Absolutely. So yeah, Catherine Hill has been great. You know, she's based here in Colorado Springs, and you know, I really wanted to work with someone that was just close. So you know, it's, like I said, she's on the ice working with other athletes, and I just said, you know, can you work on just movement with me just for fun? And you know, I started to really enjoy it, and then we played around with a piece of music, and then it kind of took off from there. I'm like, oh, well, can you just continue choreographing for me, which was great. And then, you know, I always, you know, loved Philip Mills. And so I talked to Philip in the beginning of the year as well. And I'm like, look, this is what's happening, and I would love to still have you part of my team. And so Philip was so great about it. He was willing to do anything to help. And so Philip was still part of the team. You know, he's a family member to me. And so he was willing to do whatever he can to help, whether it's on the program or skating skills or in the ballet room. So I feel like I got the best of both worlds. So with Catherine, you know, she's young and eager and here in Colorado Springs, and we just kind of connected and meshed real well. And so we're just, you know, jiving and having fun along the way.
Yeah. And I know you really do take steps to try to improve your areas of components every single season. What have you done differently over this off season with these new programs, with the new choreographer that you haven't done before?
Like I said, with the jumps, where I was, you know, took it upon myself to work on, you know, the technique itself, I took the time to work on movement by myself on the ice as well. And then, you know, started working with her on movement just for fun. And then, you know, it took it, you know, to the, you know, off ice in the ballet room. And then, you know, we have a steady plan of, you know, having to improve upon body movement and listening to the music. And then it started to grow from there, and something that I just really started to enjoy. And it's now built into the training week. And, you know, she's been great along the way, and I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, taking different dance classes throughout, in the springs, and just kind of joining and stepping in with other, you know, companies. And obviously I still probably look terrible compared to everyone else, but just trying to make strides and you know, learn along the way, but also enjoying it along the way, because this sport, you know, comes and goes so fast. That's what I'm trying to do here. Like I said, making memories and enjoying it.
I don't know if you noticed, but I was actually looking at your component scores from Worlds in 2016 versus this past weekend at Cup of China, and we all know that scores escalate a lot at the biggest events like Worlds or the Olympics. And so how encouraged are you, and this might be the first time you're finding this out, but how encouraged are you by the fact that you are scoring higher components right now based on your Cup of China results than you were at Worlds in 2016?
Yeah, I actually did not know that until you just said that. It's actually really cool. It's neat that, you know, my hard work's paying off, and I just want to, like I said, improve upon that. I think I can still, you know, obviously there's so much more room for improvement. I just want to have my passion come through with these programs. And hopefully, like I said, there's a lot more to do and to fix. But hopefully, you know, those not only watching in the stands, but watching on TV can feel that the passion and the movement and their choreography. And hopefully, you know, that just elevates the scores even more. Like I said, I'm just trying to compete with the best of the men here, not only in the world, but in the United States. We have some of the greatest component skaters here. And I just want to try to get close to them and, you know, be competitive on that side of the mark. I might not ever be too close to them, but if I can get in the area percentage near them, that'd be pretty cool. You know, I'll be honored to have that.
Well, tell me a little bit more about the stories behind your short program in free skate. Your short is to Les Mis, bring him home, mm-hmm. and your free skate is a you know, kind of a medley of Phantom of the Opera.
I guess what I can say about Les Mis, I wanted something that was very similar to what I skated to in 2016, which was Pavarotti. And so I wanted to have a similar vibe to that. And I went back, and I'm like, you know what, this is Les Mis is a piece that I've was similar, and I've been wanting to skate to this for a really long time. And so that's the reason why I chose that, like I said. And with Phantom, going back, I remember watching the first time I watched Phantom was Patrick Chan, and I forgot what year it was. I think it was 2011, I believe, when he was first doing two quads in a free program. And I remember that that piece was so memorable. And at the time, I was training with Patrick, and I'm like, I want to be like this guy when I grow up, which he's only a year and a half older than me, which was kind of sad. But when I become a senior, I want to be like him and make a memorable moment like that. And, you know, he was not even, he's probably had 30 seconds left and everyone was standing at the Canadian Nationals. And I'm like, look, if I can have one of these moments in my lifetime, just one at a big event, that would be something really cool. So having that in mind, I was like, you know what, it's an Olympic year. I want to have a moment like that. This piece of music means a lot to me. I'm like, this is going to be cool. This is it. I want that. I want that moment. And so that's a big reason why I chose this Phantom of the Opera for the long.
Last time I talked to you, we talked about your costume choices. And you mentioned that you ended up designing your own costumes last season because you had mm-hmm. been hearing some criticism from people. What was your strategy on costumes for this season?
Yeah, costumes are always funny, eh? I was always laugh and everyone takes it, you know, they're like, oh, your costume's so ugly. I'm like, what are we focusing on, the costume? Or are we focusing on the components, you know, the movement and the program? And I'm like, what do you want to focus on? I know it's part of the whole package, but like, it doesn't matter how many rhinestones you actually have on your costumes. I'm like, please, like, let's just skate, you know? And that's where I go back. I'm like, can we all just wear, you know, with snowboarding and track and field, they all wear like, USA wears the USA gear and Canada wears the Canadian gear. I'm like, can we just all wear the same stuff? And then there's no problem with that. You're just literally focusing on the movement in the program and the jumps. And so that the costumes won't be a problem where people won't be chirping in and saying, oh, I don't like this costume. I don't like this. It looks ugly. I'm like, unbelievable. But going back to the costume this season, I wanted something that kind of drapes in my short program. Sorry. I wanted something that drapes to the side. So I designed kind of like a swooping, right, flowy outfit with, I wanted a drooping neck, neckline so that could flow in the wind. And then that color came about because I told her, the costume designer, I wanted like a cream, you know, I wanted it to look like it got roughed up, you know, just like in the movie. It came out tan, actually, in my opinion. I think she believed it was cream, and I think I had a different vision of it. And so when I got there, this was actually at Salt Lake City. And I got there and she goes, do you like it? I'm like, well, I thought it was a different color. You know, I thought it was something different color. And she goes, I'll go bleach it right now. So she bleached it and literally took all the color out. And it came out like pinkish, whitish, creamish, kind of everything. And I'm like, she goes, you like it now? I'm like, this is so oddly colored. I love it. So the inside actually is still like, it didn't bleach fully through on the inside, but the outside is like a pinkish color in person. So I'm like, I love it. I love the color. It's different. And then for the free, I wanted like a knit sweater, and it legit is like, it's a knit sweater. I can't explain. It's like, it's like actually like knit, and it's like knitted and it's really neat. And I wanted like almost like a double breasted suit because I didn't want to take a literal take on Phantom of the Opera, what he was wearing. So it's a double-breasted suit on the side with buttons. It was different buttons earlier, but I took the buttons off, and I had my mom resew something else on it because I didn't like how heavy the buttons were. But it looked really cool the other way, but maybe not practical skating-wise. And then I wanted, you know, instead of having the tails on the coat, I wanted a single tail on one side. And then so that's what I created that way. So some kind of different. The color was similar to what I wanted. I wanted like a black, gray, white knit sweater. But the color when it came out was really cool as well. And so that's how those came about. And I think both pieces are really neat. Maybe not to everyone's standard. But to me, like I said, I'm doing it for myself. And I like the way it feels and the way it looks, in my opinion. I guess I enjoy them. Hopefully at least some people do too.
Interesting that you talk about the buttons. I did not even notice the buttons until I'm looking at some of the photographs right now, and it now that you talk about it, it is exactly kind of that vision of the deconstructed double-breasted suit, I guess. So very cool. I've seen very positive feedback about your costume choices this season, so you should be proud.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that. I try to stay off social media. I barely use it, but there were some people that told me, like, oh, your costumes are so ugly in person. I'm like, all right, well, they're like, who's your costume designer? I'm like, well, you're looking at them. I'm like, so complain all you want, because I really don't care. So, I always get a laugh out of that when they say stuff, and then they say the comments first, and then all of a sudden, then they ask who the costume designer was. And then I'm like, well, you're looking at it after you just said all that. And they're like, anyway, I was like, yeah, it's okay. You can make fun of it if you want. I got tough skin.
Yeah. Well, costumes aside, you, as you were saying earlier, you have your second Grand Prix coming up in France next week. So it's a very, very quick turnaround. What are you looking to improve on as you look ahead to that competition and then to the rest of your season?
I love to improve upon the short. I had a tough go in Cup of China, so I'd love to improve upon, you know, adding the quadruple in and improving upon the quality of the toe in the short, and then cleaning up the steps into the sow and centering the spins a little more. Going back and looked at some tape, the spins traveled a bit, so I was a little frustrated with that because I've been really focusing on the centering of the spins, and then continuing on making the choreography in the first half of the short program bigger. It looked like it shrunk a little bit when we went back and watched. And then going to the free, the first 47 seconds, I believe, and my choreography shrunk as well. And that's usually a way bigger in practice. So I need to go back and clarify that. And then going through the steps, some of the movements in the upper body kind of got muffled. So I'm going to go back and clarify those. And then my slow part, actually, I did the wrong steps. I forgot my steps, which is crazy. I don't know how I forgot my steps, but I did. And so I mixed up those. So I'm going to clarify that and make sure I don't forget when I go there. And then I guess working on the cleanliness in the free program on the jumps. I was really, if you look at it, my axis shifted on every jump left to right the entire time. So it made me get extremely fatigued, which kind of sucked because it was, I got fatigued way earlier than I usually do. I usually get tired like at 3 minutes and like 10 seconds into the program. Instead of, I got tired, at my halfway mark, which made it for the third quad a lot more difficult. But learning a lot from it, like I said, I'm thankful that, the program's displayed well and came away with a medal. But we'll love to look to do these programs a lot cleaner in France. And then going ahead to nationals, really making it the best performance I can make. And then keeping, that fourth quad in my pocket, if I need it to add it. But really, I've been telling everyone I'm just taking cuts, big swings at all these events. I got nothing to lose. I always said, the worst thing that could happen already happened, meaning that I already didn't make the team. I was the alternate in 2014, so my life didn't change. So it's not like anything can bad happen if I don't make the team. So I'm going out here swinging as hard as I can, swinging for the fences, and hopefully, you connect and make that team. But if not, I've enjoyed it along the way, and I had some great performances, and I've seen my parents smile when I'm out there skating. So looking forward to that, and see what happens.
Perspective is always the way to go. And by the way, you forgot your steps and you still got a level 4 on your step sequence. So there you go. So many good thoughts to you going into the rest of your season and into France. And thank you for not crashing and burning with your jet lag on the podcast, Matt. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the time. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully I'll see you around.
And that's all for this week's episode of Ice Talk. And as we round into the second half of the Grand Prix series, you will have Nick McCarville back in the host chair, as he says, next week. Big thanks to Max Aaron and Ryan Bradley for being on the podcast with me today. Be sure to tune in to Ice Network for an NHK trophy this weekend. And I know you all love to wake up in the middle of the night to watch these events, or at least I do. And if you missed any of our episodes, don't you worry, because they are all archived on Apple Podcasts and at icenetwork.com under the fans page. Rate us and leave us feedback. Tweet me at RockerSkating and at Ice Network with the hashtag IceTalk. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network studios in downtown Manhattan, I'm Jackie Wong. Stay cool, and we'll talk to you again soon.